I wanted time. Preachers were always running around saying the Lord is coming and Armageddon is next week and Hitler's the Antichrist. And man, I was sitting there like 60 hoping they were wrong. Just like you are. And that's very understandable. And some of you that are in you're young and you've got your children, and some of you that are old and have got your grandchildren. That's one thing we always kind of want. And we got Rachel. And we want a little bit of time for Rachel. Well, I really think we've got a little bit of time. It's not a whole lot, but at least we'll get to grow up a little bit more. I've waited most of my life for what you see on that screen to materialize. If this was something that I had just recently come upon and had a brainchild with it, brainstorm, I would not be as pragmatic or as certain as what I'm going to tell you during the next few minutes. For a long time, men, well-meaning men, and men that I admire and respect, swore up and down the Antichrist was coming out of Europe. And they swore up and down that he would arise like Hitler or Mussolini. Or maybe during the war they had Tojo in there a couple of times and Hirohito. And then Hal Lindsey wrote his book, The Late Great Planet Earth. And the whole American population in the world went crazy. They determined that the Antichrist would come out of Europe. That he would arise out of 10 European Economic Union markets. There were 10 at the time. And I knew that was absolute sheer, pure, unadulterated baloney. I'm almost tempted to call it heresy, but I won't. And the reason I'm telling you this is not to say to you, look how smart I am and look how clever I am. I knew all about this before anybody else. That isn't true. Before 1740, people didn't do what Hal Lindsey did, and the preachers back then, I had it right. When I was in North Africa for the first time, and in the Holy Land, and I really got to know the Arabs, and I really got to know the culture, and I got to live in their medinas, I came to see something that was horrible. Even as a young man, I was 19 when I went there, I saw something I had never seen before, and something I had never believed. I saw the spirit of Antichrist manifested in a religion called Islam. I saw something that was horrible. And I saw something that was setting up a situation that I knew had to occur. It wasn't a question of, this is what you think, Tom. It had to happen. Even when I was young and didn't have one eye and a half sense, I could see what was happening in the Middle East. So when I wrote my first book, I was still in seminary. It was the early 70s. It was called Tectonic Chaos. And I'll never forget what I wrote, because it was what caused me to write the book. I said, in the present time, this was in the early 70s, the whole world is looking at the Arab as a very insignificant, scrawny, little ugly fella sitting on a camel with no power out in the middle of the desert. And they have no regard for his power. They have no regard for his ability to do anything. They think he's an ignoramus. They think we can take all of his oil and do everything we want. And we're going to live off the Arab oil. Didn't work that way. I knew it wouldn't. I knew it couldn't. The reason was I was involved at the time in intelligence work involving the Soviet Union and Communist China and the whole Middle East. And I saw something there that had to be. It wasn't a question of, you know, well, Tom, this might happen. It had to happen. Think about it. We were there and the Soviet Union was scared of us. We were scared of the Soviet Union. China was scared of the Soviet Union and us, and we were scared of Communist China. Now, that's not a theory. That's not an idea. That's not a premise. That's not a hypothesis. That's not something like I'm saying, well, now, this is what I think it was like. That is precisely what it was like. No ifs, ands, or buts. Knowing that, I realized that the Arab nations, with all the world's oil, or most of it, would sit there in the midst between the Soviet Union, China, the United States, we would be scared to death to do anything because the Soviets would do something to us if we affected or afflicted the oil supply of the Middle East. The same was true with China and the Soviet Union. We were scared of each other. We blocked off. We absolutely blocked off all the powers from affecting the Arabs. We blocked off the Soviet Union and China. China blocked us off and the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union blocked us and China off. It was a massive block. And here in the midst of it sat the Arab world. You didn't have to be a genius to figure it out. I knew what would happen. It had to happen. The oil was the question. The oil was going to replace the dollar. The oil was going to be the driving force of the entire world. And we were sitting there and couldn't do anything about it. Neither could the Soviet Union, neither could the communist Chinese. So what did the three of us do about it? We sold them all our expertise. We sold them all our weaponry. We sold it to them. Soviet Union sold them all their expertise. Why not? It's money. Money is the root of all evil. And what did the Chinese do? They sold them all their expertise. They taught them. They trained them. They turned them into the monstrous creation they are. And I sat and watched it and watched it and watched it. And the only question in my mind is, when are they going to be able to do what they used to say was absolutely impossible? Listen, if you think what I'm telling you is opinion, you just watch the next few years. You haven't seen anything yet. They have loaded down the Arabs with high-tech weaponry, with all sorts of anti-tank weaponry that can penetrate Israeli armor. They have loaded the Arabs down with all kind of scientific expertise. They have sent their technicians and their scientists in the Arab countries, and they have turned them into a powerhouse. My friend, let me tell you, they are no longer a little scrawny fella sitting out in the middle of the Sahara Desert with no power at all, some little ignoramus who doesn't know that one and one is two, and it's a simpleton. It isn't there anymore. We are facing an enemy that is real and genuine. Now, what are we going to do about it? Nothing. Nothing. The same thing is going to continue. They're going to get stronger and stronger and stronger. Now, why am I telling you all this? To depress you? No. This is it. This is finally it. I don't have to sit around anymore and wonder, when's this going to happen, when that's going to happen. No, this is it. And the only question is precisely when. Hezbollah dealt Israel a defeat. You say, well, that cannot be true because they're mopping up over there at the present time. They're cleaning Hezbollah out. Just watch them go. No, Hezbollah dealt Israel a defeat. And the reason the Arabs have been able to deal us defeats and will continue to deliver us defeat is called guerrilla warfare. It's very simple. It's very plain. Do you really think we won the Revolutionary War just because God was with us? I do. I think we won the Revolutionary War because God was with us. But let me tell you one of the things that we used that God employed called guerrilla warfare. The British troops came over here, outnumbered us, better trained, could mow us down in a frontal assault, and we fought them with guerrilla warfare and we won. Listen, Israel has the greatest army on the surface of the earth. It's man by man for man, size for size. We have the greatest power on the earth, the United States, but they have the most mechanized and highly efficient army. If Hezbollah had come out against Israel with tanks on a main battlefield, if they had come out against them with forward infantry, with the different economies of war, which are normally accustomed in battlefield warfare, like General Sherman or like General Patton were so famous for, Israel would have mowed them down like kingpins, but they did not. Now, I said all that to say this. You have just seen the forerunner of what I have said for 32 years would finally lead to the conflict. How much time do we have? Well, I think that nothing will happen much between now and 2008. I think you'll see all kind of continued bickering and arguing, different things. But I think that the DMZ zone, the demilitarized zone, will be established in southern Lebanon. And I do believe that there will be some degree of honoring with it. But Hezbollah will be resupplied quadruple fold. And when they are resupplied this time, they will be resupplied with highly sophisticated types of Soviet and Chinese anti-tank missilery, anti-aircraft missilery, shoulder hell launched from behind closed doors, guerrilla-type warfare. And the next time that Israel makes its penetration north to do away with a situation where Hezbollah starts acting up again, maybe even kidnapping some more of their soldiers, maybe launching some more Katyushas, the next time this happens, when Israel goes up, they're going to get their tail kicked. They're going to get whipped. I mean W-H-I-P-P-E-D. Because the next time that they go up, they will not just have a bunch of Hezbollah guerrillas waiting for them. They will have the combined might of the Syrian army and the Iranian, and I'm sorry to tell you this, the Iraqi army. If you think that we can build a democracy in Iraq that will stand, I have a nice platinum Timex watch I would like to sell you. I'm a patriotic man. I care for George Bush. I admire him as president. I voted for him. But as far as being able to establish a democracy in Iraq, you can forget it. I have taught that consistently as absolutely impossible. I lived among them. I know them. I want to assure you that our troops will be pulled out of there. And they will be probably pulled out completely by 2008. We have a political year coming up. It's not the fashionable thing to do. Our country and our world is no longer run by common sense. It's no longer run by morality. It's run by political expediency and graft and corruption. We live in a society that, if there ever was a society that was primed for the second coming of Christ, full of love of money, materialism, every ungodly thing that can be pictured or presented, this is our society. Every single thing points to the second coming of Christ. And all I'm going to be talking about in the next few minutes are some things that have to do with what I think is going to be happening. And I'm tired. I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing better than I thought. First of all, if you get a chance, tell my wife how much you appreciate her putting up with me. That is the most remarkable woman I have ever met in my entire life. She has put up with me. She has done things that I cannot mention for me, because then I will get chewed out when I get home. But the truth of the matter is, she is remarkable. And I tell you what I have discovered. You are a remarkable church. You are a remarkable people. You have stuck together through thick and thin, through all kinds of problems and troubles and woes, and you've stuck together. Each one of you is different. Charlie is completely different from Joan, and Geraldine is completely different from Gail. No two of you are the same. And yet, we have one thing in common. We have Jesus Christ. And we have Him as the foundation of this church. And we have Him as the head of the church. And we are His body. And what a remarkable group of people. We'll have our differences. You won't like some things I say. I won't like some things you say. You won't like some of my ways. I won't like some of your ways. But we have one thing in common. We know the way, and the way is through Christ. And I think this church will stick together no matter what. I worried for a long time. I was concerned that maybe it wouldn't stick together. I was afraid maybe I hadn't preached all the things I should preach. Maybe I hadn't been used the way I should have been used. I'm not afraid anymore. It's not you that's remarkable. It's Christ that's in you. So how far have we got to go? Well, I think this attack, Israel's going to get fed up with what's about to happen. And Hezbollah will arm again. Same scenario will repeat itself. And the next time Israel will say, we're not going to make the same mistake. We're going to go in there from the onslaught. Now, we're going to clean this out once and for all. And when they go in there the next time, they're not going to clean anything out. They're going to get cleaned out, and they're going to be driven into the Negev. And they're going to have 10 Arab nations solidified in a determination to slaughter every single one of them. It's going to happen. Now, how much time have we got? Well, I think we've got the rest of this year. I don't know what's going to happen to the economy. I certainly don't think it's going to get a whole lot better. I think we've got 2007. I don't think there's any problem there. I think that maybe a problem could begin as early as 2008. I don't think it will happen after 2012. In my time setting, could I be wrong in this particular period of time I've chosen? Yes, I could be. After all, we are God's church, and I am His pastor, and I might as well be honest with you. It might be after 2012. I'm not setting myself up where in 2012 I can say, well, here's what I was wrong about. I'm not doing that. I'm telling you ahead of time, this is a guesstimate. And I'm not trying to get you all excited about something, because I'm 74 years old. I've just had 5 bypasses. It's been the most horrifying time I've experienced since Vietnam. And if it were not for Imogene, for God and Imogene, I don't know how I could be standing up here now. I'm just very thankful for your prayers, and your love meant a lot to me. It encouraged me. It let me know inside, they want me back over there. And that was a tremendous internal help to me. You may think that all pastors think they're greatly beloved and the whole church wants them over there. This is something that you always hope, but you're never quite sure of. I'm sure now. I'm certain of it. And so it's good to be back. I doubt if this thing will happen in 2008. It might. 2009? I don't know. We may have 2009. So you got time to finish school, make all A's, be the valedictorian of the class, marry some charming, handsome, beautiful girl, live happily ever after. She'll never nag you. She'll never give you lectures. It'll be wonderful. And when you find her, would you please let us know what her name is? You got time. You got time. Go ahead and enjoy it. Don't let these old prophecy lectures get you down. Don't let it say, oh my goodness, you know, it looks like everything's going to go and I won't get to be there with my granddaddy Cecil. And I love him, and I won't get to see him much longer. Oh, you're going to get to see that ugly booger around quite a while. And you know, I won't get to see my brothers and sisters and all that stuff. You know, what am I going to do? Let me tell you what to do. Just try to let the Lord have His way in your heart and in your life. Get up every morning. Try to do what's right. And you know sometimes you're not going to do what's right. Just ask God to forgive you and go on. And don't worry about all this. If you're living every day for Jesus, man, you don't have a thing in the world to worry about. And if 2012 comes around, you can say, whew. But if I'm still alive, I'll be right here to warn you. You better be careful, because it's not too much further. But you're just going to have to live with that all your life, just like I have. Just like I have. This is the problem. We're not dealing anymore with people that aren't equipped with weaponry. We're dealing with people that are equipped with all kinds of sophisticated weapons. And they got one thing going. They got one thing going that we don't have. An absolute fanaticism in their religious belief that if they die in a war against infidels, they will immediately be ushered into the presence of God. Allah, their God. That's how they get all these martyrs. We don't have that. And I thank God we don't. Thank God from the depths of my soul we don't. But let's be realistic. This is what we're facing. Folks, they're not going to quit. We're not going to win the war on terrorism. Should we keep on fighting? Absolutely. Should we keep on resisting? Absolutely. Should we keep on arresting, imprisoning, executing? Absolutely. But down in the depths of our soul, I think we need to realize we are not going to win this war on terrorism. And the good thing about it is, that means this is the last war. That means this is the final war. So I said all that with a realization that whatever we're going to do with our lives, however we're going to make them count, I think it's time that we did that. And I think it's time that we got very serious about it. You are a very remarkable church. And I'm not praising you that to blow smoke in your ear, to get on your good side. You are. Lord knows I've been with you and I've watched you, and each one of you is so different. Each one of you is so different. And yet I love you the way you are, because God has taught me to love you the way you are. And that's a remarkable thing in a church, when we learn to accept each other, overlook each other's faults, forgive, and bounce back, and go on. That's what's going to get us through this. And what is that? It's the Spirit of Christ in this church. It's the Spirit of Christ in you. And that's what's going to get us through this. We're going to stick together as a body. We're going to bind ourselves together by the power of Christ within us. We're not going to let anything deter us. And when trials and tribulation and trouble come, we're going to turn to one another, because we know that Christ is in each one of us and that Christ superintends and oversees this church. Let me put it to you plainly. All that stuff I said over there, I believe that. I believe that. I think terrible things are coming. But I could care less, because this church, I believe God has prepared. And I think that no matter what happens in the midst of it all, by the power of Christ within us, I believe we'll stick together. Well, here's Syria setting up here. Here's Iraq over here, and way out over here is Iran. The next time that Israel makes this little run up into Lebanon, whether it's 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, I don't know which one it'll be. And it's just a guess that it'll be any one of them. I'm not hedging. I'm just being honest with you. But I honestly believe it will occur in that time period. And that's my guesstimate. That sometime, point in time, between 2008 and 2012, we're going to have this attack. Before all this mess started, and all these charts are charts that I've shown you before, we had the areas patrolled by the United Forces. We had Lebanon up here. We had Syria running all this stuff across that they got from Iran, plus some of the stuff they got from the Soviet Union. We had them running it across and reinforcing Hezbollah. These UN forces weren't worth a... They were about like a frog floating around in a punch bowl. They were absolutely useless. And they did nothing. Hezbollah built itself in, dug itself in. I knew what would happen when Israel crossed. I told you. I said, this is an army. It is a terrorist army. I told you repeatedly, it is not a terror group. It is a terror army. And they dug in, and they fought a successful guerrilla warfare out of this. Once the Israeli troops pull out, then Hezbollah will claim victory. And you will see the Arabs all over the world in all kind of different countries, and you will see our TV stations picking them up. And they will be going, wah! The women will be screaming and dancing. They'll be shooting AK-47s in the air. And they will claim victory. You say, well, I don't think they won. Forgive me for the way I make this remark. Who cares what you think? It's what they think. And they will think that they won. And it's going to unify them, solidify them. And you're going to see more arms flowing across out of Syria into Hezbollah than you ever saw before. And this time they're going to be highly sophisticated weapons. Well, that was the old picture after Israel pulled out in the year 2000. This is the new picture right here. Up here you've got the king of the north, Syria, a little bit off the chart over here on the right. Down here you've got the king of the south, Israel, sitting down here. This is Lebanon in here. This is Lebanon in here. This is the demilitarized zone. This is how much Israel was able to clear out about a week ago. This is how much they had cleared out. And when I say cleared out, they had gotten rid of most of the Hezbollah strongholds. This is the Latani River. And Israel has since gone on up in here, and they're trying to clear all this out. They'll clear a great deal of it out, and they will stay there. They will not pull out until all the international force and the Lebanese soldiers come back down into this area, take it over from them, and supposedly begin a period of time where they try to disarm Hezbollah and turn this into a zone where you don't have Hezbollah empowered in it. That has about as much chance of happening as it's snowing at 204 Hickory today. It's not going to happen. First of all, the Lebanese are largely in favor of Hezbollah. Secondly, so are those international forces they're going to send in. And Israel is the world's enemy. I rejoice in that. I rejoice in the fact that Israel is looked upon as the enemy of the world. That's exactly what God said it would be like in the last days, just before His Son's coming. So in all this tragedy and all this sadness and all this unhappiness, there is a great deal of joy and happiness in my heart. It's been a rough several weeks here, but it's been the greatest time of my life because I've watched these things happen. I've seen the fruition of everything set up for it to happen. And I'm standing here before you right now, tired, old, wore out, but who cares? I've got a joy and a happiness inside me that God has planted there for a long, long time. I've been waiting for this to happen. It's about to happen. Daniel 11:40. This is what we waited for. I think between 2008 and 2012, you're going to see it happen. And you're going to see 10 Arab nations waiting on the other side of that demilitarized zone, anxiously laying a trap for Israel. And Israel is going to fall right into it. Daniel 11:40. At the time of the end shall the king of the south, that's Israel, push at him, and the king of the north, Syria, shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. Waited a long time for that scripture to be fulfilled. I'm convinced it's going to be fulfilled between 2008 2012. And you're going to see those 10 Arab nations, Syria leading them, charge south into Israel and drive them down into the Negev wilderness. And then there will not be one single solitary doubt in my mind or in your mind or in anyone else's mind that has ever heard this, that this is it. It's coming. I'm telling you all this not to impress you or to make you say, well, he sure is smart. I'm telling you this because it's going to happen. And I think it ought to influence our everyday lives. I think we ought to do the best we can at whatever we're doing. Whether we're putting in air conditioning units, whether we're sitting in an office working, whether we're in school, whatever it is that we're doing in our lives, whether we're retired, we ought to do the best we can at everything we're doing, no matter what it is. But at the same time, we need to let Christ have the predominance in our lives. Everybody, the American public is notorious for procrastination. You can see that every year at income tax time. You can see people that wait until the last minute. Here's one of them. And they decide, I'm going to put that off till the last minute. And they do. Well, this is the last minute. I can't tell you the exact year, date, or month, but you don't have to be a prophetic genius to see that this thing's winding down. And if it's winding down the way Jesus said, Jesus is real. You ought to make church something important in your life. As a matter of fact, church ought to be the most important thing in your life. Assembling together and worshiping this God who was merciful and gracious enough to save you, to lead you to baptism, and then to show you the things that were going to happen and let you watch them. How can we possibly stand before Him at His judgment seat and explain why we didn't let Him predominate in our hearts and in our lives? We must Whatever you do in this church, whether you're in class or teaching a class, if you're a teacher, you need to do your very best. If you're a student, you need to try to listen to the teacher and control your own emotions and control your own likes and dislikes. And you need to learn what the teacher has to say. You need to be faithful and loyal to God's church. This is the last day. This is it. This is the time. And I'm just encouraging you to let you know that there's nothing to be afraid of except failing to let Christ predominate in your life. This came off this morning. It's from the Haaretz, the land of Israel, correspondent. Syria still transferring supply of rockets, missiles to Hezbollah. August the 13th. Syria continues its effort to transfer large quantities of war material, include its rockets to Lebanon in an effort to assist Hezbollah in its war against Israel, a senior Israeli Defense Forces source told Haaretz on Saturday. According to the IDF source, the Air Force has succeeded in partially stemming the arms transfers, but intelligence shows that supply convoys have managed to cross into Lebanon from Syria. Senior Syrian Army and intelligence officers are involved in the arms smuggling, according to the senior IDF source, who says it is unlikely this continues without the explicit support of the regime in Damascus. Two specific types of weapons, anti-tank missiles and rockets, used to target Israeli civilians are of concern. The alert levels of the Syrian army, especially on the Golan Heights, is at its highest level since the Lebanon War in 1982. And mostly defense, but the IDF is not excluding the possibility that Damascus will initiate a limited ground operation during the closing stages of the war. Such an act, from a Syrian point of view, would aim at improving its position toward the end of the current confrontation and force Israel to begin negotiations on a border diplomatic initiative that would include the return of the Golan Heights. Part of the IDF's defensive deployment is meant to counter such a threat, including the development of anti-aircraft missiles in Haifa and the Sharon to intercept possible launches of Syrian Scud surface-to-surface ballistic missiles targeting Israeli cities. In another development in recent fighting, IDF forces uncovered the bodies of a number of fighters who appear to belong to Iran's Revolutionary Guard. No identifying documents were discovered on the bodies, but tattoos suggest they belong to the Iranian force. According to IDF sources, Iran sent several dozen Revolutionary Guard fighters to boost the ranks of Hezbollah. We're headed for the big one. The only question is, when will the big one occur? This is one which I sent out yesterday. Maybe this church, I hope this church realizes that one of the things that God has used me for here is not just to show you these things, but to show them to people all over the world. Our internet site this week will probably end up averaging about 160 hits a day. They come from all over the world. They come from Pakistan. They come from India. They come from Germany. They come from Israel. They come from Islamic countries. They come from all over Europe. I've been trying desperately to warn people for a long time. This is it. And so the ministry of this church has far-reaching aspects in that I am your pastor and I am a part of the church. And this website is something the church operates and tries to warn people. So I think we're doing what God wants, and I appreciate your prayers for the website, for the things that go out on it. And I want you to realize we're not just sitting here doing nothing. We're trying to warn as many people as possible. An important phase of the implementation of United Nations Resolution 1701 is underway while Israel waits for deployment of their replacement forces from the UN in Lebanon. They are now mopping up the forces and installations of Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. It is very important because the degree to which they are successful in this last operation in Lebanon will determine how long it will take Hezbollah to regroup and cause Israel to launch another offensive. Since I believe the next time Israel launches an offensive across its northern border will trigger 3.5 years of tribulation in Israel, how well they are able to clean Hezbollah out now determines how long it will take the 10 toes of Daniel 2, chapter 2, to get ready to lure Israel back across the border to launch a surprise jihad against her. I believe we are getting ready to enter the prophetic phase of the tribulation period described in 1 Thessalonians 5, 3 and 4. The time when Israel will be lulled into a false sense of safety and security in her own might and ability to defend her borders. But she will be stunned and defeated the next time she crosses into Lebanon and driven into the Negev wilderness. My guesstimate as to when she will cross again into Lebanon to trigger the final 3.5 years before Armageddon is indeed a guess. No more and no less. But I believe it will occur at some point in time between 2008 and 2012. It will occur, but precisely when can only be a guess until it does. When it does, it will set a chronological series of events that will culminate some 3.5 years later at Armageddon. There are two things I will be watching over the next couple of years. Two things I will be watching over the next couple of years, Lord willing, that I believe will reveal how safe Israel begins to feel in her own mindset. One, the completion of the border security barrier wall between herself and the Palestinian terrorists. That's around the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. It should be completed by 2008. And two, the creation of a demilitarized zone, a DMZ barrier between herself and Hezbollah. If Israel comes to the point she believes she can maintain a reasonable degree of peace and safety along these two zones by her own military forces and expertise, then 1 Thessalonians 5 and 3 will kick in, and the chronological sequence of events listed following it will begin to be fulfilled. I think that between 2008 and 2012, I believe that this prophecy will be fulfilled. 1 Thessalonians 5, 3 and 4. For when they shall say, Israel, peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. Israel's going to get hammered this time. She's going to lose. But I'm glad she's going to lose, because that means that Jesus is going to come and rescue her out of the Negev once she's driven there. And this is a message to the church at Thessalonica. It is also a message to any church that belongs to the Lord. But ye, Himaeus, plural, brethren, are not in darkness. We're not the children of darkness. We're the Lord's church, and He dwells among us, and He dwells in us. If that day should overtake you as a thief, we can't know the exact day. I don't think we can even know the exact year. But I do know that we're not the children of darkness. And if you can't sense inside you that this thing is drawing near because of Scripture, then you better re-examine your own position and your own heart. Because I'm not telling you an exact time, but this has to happen, and I believe it is soon. Zechariah 13:8. This is going to happen to Israel. Horrific. This shall come to pass that in all the land of Israel, saith the Lord, two parts shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. If right now this attack were to be launched today, there would be 1.8 million Israelis that would survive. All the rest would be slaughtered. This is what's going to happen to Israel. And the woman fled into the wilderness. It's the Negev wilderness. But she had to play prepared of God. You've seen me, heard me preach on that many times. The trouble that God has gone to prepare the Negev for that purpose. That they, and I've talked to you who the they are before, and I've preached this many times, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. You'll find all the people that tune into the internet have access to all of this material. They go back and look at it. How do I know they look at it? Because I have a sight monitor, and I can tell exactly what pages they run off, exactly who they are, and where they're running it off from. Do you want to know who has run off the most material off our website? Pakistanis. Pakistanis. They're chewing this thing up like a duck chews up a June bug. They're looking at this and they're saying, well, looks like we may win. I don't think they like the part about being about losing later on, but they're chewing this thing up alive. Jeremiah 37. Alas, for that day is great, for that there's none like it. So that's all the gloom stuff. That's the bad stuff. That's all the fighting. That's all the war. That's all the stuff you don't want. I understand. I don't want it either. When I was your age, I was a lover. We used to play post office out behind the church building. And Peggy Garner was the best smoocher of them all. And you'd turn that around. And they used to call me the backbreaker. Because I'd get my arm around them and I'd give them a great big smooch. You didn't do stuff like that, Brother Michael Murray. Yes, I did. You said, well, are you bragging about it? No. Are you proud of it? No. But I know you. Hello, friend. I remember.